The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Everybody knows that the Pesach Seder is a time for parents to communicate with their children, to inspire them, to connect them with their parents and their grandparents, and a tradition of reciting and recalling and reliving a historic event that took place 3,320 years ago. And it's the responsibility of a parent, to share with your children all of the miracles that took place, all of the redemption, the geulah that took place, and how that through Yitzias Mitzrayim we became the nation of Hashem, eventually to bring us to Har Sinai, to give us the Torah, to share with us His purpose for creating the world in the first place, and to give us the blueprint to live a life of meaning and happiness and fulfillment, to be able to give us schar, to be able to do chesed, which is the tachlis for which He created the whole world. Okay, now, I'd like to reverse the roles. I'd like to see if we can't make this Seder an educational experience for the older generation. How do you like that? That sounds like reforming the Jewish tradition, if you will. In other words, instead of I know, but I like to say it in a much more radical way. Just come home with the Dvar Torah. But we're going to see if we can't develop a couple of brief ideas here, which when you sit down to the Seder, you will be able to inspire everyone. Now the question is, how could it be done? So first of all, even though there is an obligation on a parent to teach a child, however, we know that even if a person doesn't have any children, it's a mitzvah on one person to ask and the other one to answer, the wife to ask, the husband to answer. So the mitzvah of communicating and discussing the story, all of the issues of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is a mitzvah on everyone, number one. Number two, something else that's interesting. It sounds like from the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs that one of the intentions of the mitzvah of a parent telling the child was not only to communicate with the child, but was to strengthen the realization and the focus and the understanding of the parent himself. In other words, when I tell my child, and so forth and so on, what I'm doing besides communicating with my child is, by telling my child, I am strengthening myself. Because if I'm telling it, especially to my son, to my daughter, to my family, what am I saying? I'm saying, hey, I'm telling them truth. I'm passing on to them a testimony that I heard from my father, he heard from his father, he heard from his father all the way back, and therefore it's a strengthening of me. Same thing if we speak at our Seder and we give information to those assembled there, even if it's our parents and our grandparents, then we too are strengthening ourselves in the process. So I would just like to highlight just a few points with your cooperation and attention. Just a couple of points which I think are very, very critical. One thing we discussed, I believe, is the power of this experience to live on for 3,320 years. Where does it come from? 3,320 years, Jewish people, probably ending up in the billions eventually if you add them all throughout the generations, wherever they were, in any part of the world, always sat down on the same date and relived the story, the episode, the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Told the story in the language of the Haggadah, acted it out in so many different ways by the eating of the matzah, which reminds us and represents the actual matzah that they ate because they couldn't afford the time. They had to leave so quickly when that moment came, because they couldn't even afford the time to bake the bread. And eating the moror, which reminds us, especially if you eat certain kinds of moror, of the type of shibud they had there. the type of measly diet, digging less than kezayas of karpas into the tears, the salt water, the haroises representing the tit, the mortar with which they had to make, they were forced to build cities and to make bricks. We not only remember, we not only retell, we relive the experience. Where does that strength, where does that commitment for thousands of years to enact the same historic events over and over and over again throughout the world, wherever there's Jewish people, even those that are not so religious, they're sitting down to a Seder. If you know the surveys that they have, if that the most popular Jewish affiliation and holiday, even amongst those that are not religious, is the Pesach Seder.
No,
Yom Kippur is the second one.
All right,
let's not argue. Listen. Shh. Nah, poor.
No,
anyway, but shh. Pesach, the Pesach Seder is clearly the one, that's subscribed to him. And I think that the reason for this, the strength from this, comes from two things. And this is something that's very, very significant. Reason number one, the events are not stories. They started not as somebody heard a story, somebody believed a story, somebody accepted a story, somebody read a story. They started with a generation of millions of people who experienced the events themselves. When you start off with eyewitness testimony, with personal experience, and not just one guy says, you know, I had a little experience, okay. Millions of people, everyone telling their son, writing the details down in a book, passing it on to their children, reading it publicly, constantly. This has such an impact that it carried on for thousands of years, because it started not as a story, but it started as a reality attested to by millions of participants in the events. That's number one. Number two, I think there's a completely different power that this Pesach has. Those people that saw their great-grandmother climbing up on a chair to clean the chometz off the ceiling when nobody in their family ever ate chometz on the ceiling. That left an impression. Hey, what's going on over here? This must be serious stuff. And then they start to look into it, and they find out, the Torah says, you're not allowed to eat chometz. Okay. Not allowed to own chometz. Okay. Bal yeroye, bal yemotze. A kezayis, okay. A little drop of chometz that falls into something isn't bottle on Pesach, and if you eat it, the impact of the chumrah, of how serious this was taken. I remember as a kid still hearing about a friend of mine who had a friend. I think I met this kid once. He used to go, he wasn't religious, this guy. He went to public school. And on Yontif too, I don't know, but Chol HaMoed, whatever he went on Pesach to school. He used to bring ham sandwiches on matzah, because he wouldn't eat bread. Of course he wouldn't eat bread. I think that your mother tells a story how you went once someplace, I don't know where it was, and some place on Chol HaMoed, and they saw people there completely irreligious, and they bought the hamburgers, but they took off the rolls, because they ate the meat, but they took off the rolls because you can't eat chometz on Pesach. It left such an imprint, because we saw our great grandmothers went crazy to the extent the Torah demands of us, to the extent that they carried it even further. That left an imprint that says, hey, I don't know about Sukkot, and I don't know about Shabbos, and I don't know about Tefillin, and I don't know about Kashrus, but I know about Pesach? Whoa! You better be careful. That's something that's scary. So those two factors, the fact that it started with eyewitness testimony, and the fact that it was so chomor throughout the Doiros, I think have enabled or have encouraged, have inspired that people continue reciting these stories and reliving these events for thousands of years later. But what do these events really mean to us? And that, I think, is really the key. The Ramban says that from the Nisim Geluyim, the blatant miracles, Dom, Tzvadei, Akinim, a Jew experiencing, imagine such an experience. I'm drinking from a cup, let's say with a straw, and I'm drinking water. Playing, I don't want to start with that because you'll think that might be blood. And this other guy next to me, he's drinking from the same cup, no tricks, no two levels, no confusion, no magic. And he's drinking from there, and he's drinking blood. And no matter how hard he tries to get from mine, it's all blood. Me, it's water. Him, it's blood. Imagine frogs croaking all over the place, jumping at everybody's throat, and the Jewish people don't even feel them. Living amongst them. Imagine standing in a room. Imagine if we stood in this room and it's a the light of day shines through for us. Or for that little mitzri in the back over there. He's frozen in a pillar of darkness and he can't see anything. How could it be? How could it be? This can only be clearly a clarity of vision of the Creator himself. He's the Creator. He created light and darkness. He created the water and the blood. And he controls it all. And the Ramban says that by realizing and recognizing and paying attention and refocusing on these blatant miracles, we come to recognize the hidden miracles, which are really the essence of our life in this world. And that means Hashem's Hashgocha Protis. And the truth of the matter is that unless we focus on these miracles at least once in a while, and the truth is the Torah asks us to focus on them every day because we're supposed to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim by day and by night, and we put on tefillin to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, and tzitzis reminds us of Yetzias Mitzrayim. No, tzitzis is the Arba Kanfes Rashi brings is from the Arba L'Shene Shel Gula, v'hitzeisi v'hitzalti v'goalti v'lokachti, mezuzah, and pidin ha-ben, and bris mi, and Shabbos, and Yom Tov, Yisechel Yetzias Mitzrayim. The constant memory of the blatant, obvious revelation of Hashem in front of millions of eyewitnesses of his powers of creation. In fact, the Ramban says that, you know, nobody ever witnessed creation until Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Adam HaRishon got up late that day. Believe it or not, he was created at the end of the sixth day. It wasn't his fault, you know. But by the time he was created, the world was already in existence. So he never saw anything. He didn't see creation. He saw the creation, but he didn't see the acts of creation. So there's no eyewitness testimony to creation except in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, we saw the Creator. If blood and water come from the same glass, if light and darkness can be mishtamshin in the same room, that's the Creator. We see. We see vayihor, vayichoshech. We see. It's from that we come to recognize. We can now discover that Hashem, that same Hashem, who's involved in these blatant miracles, is involved in every minute detail of our existence. And when we realize that, we come to recognize that. And I think I must have once told you, to me this is like the story that stands out in my mind, because it was about a young man who was completely irreligious. But he heard at a seminar a discussion about Hashgocha Protis and Bitochen. In other words, Hashem does great miracles. We know. We have eyewitness testimony. And by the way, we've seen even greater miracles throughout our history. Because, and I've mentioned this before, Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the Hakdoma to his Sidur swears chai nafshi by his life that the miracles that have assured the survival of Klal Yisrael to this day and the Torah to this day, Klal Yisrael with its Torah, those miracles of the goals the last 2,000 years are greater than the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf.
So it says that the thing of splitting of the Yamsuf was the greatest miracle.
No, until the time. It said, "Vayamir Hashem Moshe Avdo Maserosa Shivcha Alam Leroy Yecheskel Bin Vosoi." But he says these miracles are greater. The collective miracles. Think about it. I'll tell you why. Think about it. Here you have this nation. Look what Klal Yisrael is. You know, there's a very beautiful imagery in the Korban Olam. In the Korban Olam, we ask Hashem, "Proik Yas Onoch Mipumar Yevoso." We say, Hashem, please redeem your little lamb, the little shepsela, the little lamb, from the mouth of the lion. Imagine a lamb sitting in a lion's mouth for 2,000 years. 2,000 years in a lion's mouth. The lion, he scratches. He tries. And you know what he does? He scratches. He maims. He does a little damage, that's for sure. He does a lot of damage. But he can't devour that lion. That lamb. He can't devour the lamb. He's trying to swallow him. He's trying to get rid of him. I want to finish, eat him, finish him off. Can't do it. 2,000 years. 2,000 years, every enemy, anyone who wanted to, we were free. What's the word? We were fodder in their cannons. We were free for them to do anything they wanted to us. All the enemies, the Greeks, the Romans, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, everybody attacked the Jewish people. And you know what happened? Every single one of our enemies, including the Nazis in Germany, are relegated to the history books. They're finished. The Third Reich is dead. The Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Persians, they're gone. Nebuchadnezzar, they're all finished. You find them a little bit in the history books, a little bit in the museums, and that's all. And Am Yisrael Chai, the Klal Yisrael is still around. We're still making new yeshivas every year. Wherever you go, people wake up every morning, they daven, they put on tefillin, they do the mitzvahs, they learn Torah. What's going on in this world? By all seichel, we shouldn't be alive today. After 2,000 years of such intense persecution, freedom of every nation in the world to do and say and try to do whatever they want to us, and we're here, and they're all gone, dead and buried and forgotten. This, he says, is the greatest when you add all of these miracles together. It's collectively the greatest of miracles, greater than Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yam Suf. So miracles to us are not just relics of the past. Miracles to us are in fact the reality of our existence. Now, there's something else. And this is the story I wanted to share with you. There was this young man who was at a seminar and completely had no religious background or training or education whatsoever. And he heard about Hashgacha Pratis, Hashem's intimate involvement with every detail of our existence. He heard about the Nisim Gluyim of Mitzrayim, which, as the Ramban said, clued us in to allow us to recognize the Nisim Nistorim, the hidden miracles that are part of every aspect of our existence. And he was very taken by this. And he says, and if you have trust in Hashem, the more you believe in it, the more you recognize it, the more you count on it, the more you rely on it, the more Hashem deals with you specially, separately, intimately, and the more hashgacha that you're going to feel, and the more you're going to get the results that you're looking for. He goes home, and his mother, who was a single parent, who was making a wedding that week for her daughter, he went home on a Sunday night, and Thursday night, I think, was the wedding, and his mother bemoans her fate to him and says, I'm short $15,000 to make this wedding on Thursday, and I have no clue where this money could possibly come from. And here this young man, who she never raised religious and she never sent him to a yeshiva, and she never understood that he knows anything about anything, but she didn't until he came to the seminar, and he says, don't worry. He says, there's a God in the world. He's done amazing miracles in the past. And he has such a thing called Hashgacha Pratis. He takes care of everybody's individual needs. And if you trust him, you can be assured that he will not disappoint you. And she's looking at him probably a little bit, you know, but he says, no, it's for real. I know. I saw it. I heard it. I was shown it. I was given all of the evidence and the testimony to the reality of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Hashem's involvement in the world. This is reality. Next day, she had a little business, and she used to sell costume jewelry. Costume jewelry is the cheap $15, $20, $25, $30, you know, jewelry that's supposed to look like. I know. Wait a second. Okay, so that's what she used to sell. Anyway, there was a lady who had bought a necklace from her a few weeks ago and kept coming back every other day that the clip, the clasp, whatever it's called, was breaking. It never stayed. Every time she put it on, it would fall off. And she had it fixed once, and she had it fixed twice, and she had it fixed a third time, and a fourth time. And this lady comes back and says, give me my money back. I don't want you to fix it anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with this stupid necklace. I don't know what's going on over here, but it's just not worth my time. And she had to refund her $20 or whatever it was, you know, that she paid for it. Fine. But the lady was very curious as why it keeps on breaking. It doesn't make sense. She always gave it to be fixed. It keeps on breaking. She brings it to her jeweler, or whatever it is, the guy who takes care of her things, and she asks him, please look at it. And he pulls out his thing, you know, and he starts to look, and he says, wow, I'll give you $15,000 for this necklace. Now, he didn't know that she has to make a wedding, and she's short $15,000. $15,000, says, this is not costume jewelry that you usually deal with. this is the real thing. It was worth what? Who? Okay, because an honest guy. Come on, leave me alone, please. Akasha thais. Anyway, yeah. So, $15,000. And so this guy comes and tells me, I met him at a thing a few months later. He says, had my mother not known that Hashem is involved, had she not been inspired that Hashem gets involved in people's personal business, had she not had some level, I was able to convince her of some level of trust that in fact Hashem takes care of things, she never would have believed it and it never would have happened. And he recognized, I don't know whether it would have happened or wouldn't have happened, but he was able to recognize, and she was able to recognize, the hand of Hashem in simple aspects of their lives because of the fact that she learned and she realized. So let me just finish. So the same thing is, when we look at Yetzias Mitzrayim, we look at Dom, Tzvardei, Akinim, Orev, all of the Makas. Makas Bechoyres, you know what Makas Bechoyres was? Here you have millions of people, and so many hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, I don't know how many Bechoyrim. And every single Bechoyr, in every single family, it made no difference. You know, the Mitzrayim was Shtufei Zima. So the Yichus of who was a Bechoyr and who was not a Bechoyr to the mother, a Bechoyr to the father, things were very confused over there. Every one of them was determined, discerned, decimated. And every Jew. V'avarti Beretz Mitzrayim b'alayla hazeh. V'hikesi kol Bechoyr me'eretz Mitzrayim. Not the Jewish people. The Malach HaMavis was reigning free. He killed out thousands, tens of thousands. I don't know what the numbers were. Hundreds of thousands. I don't know. Not a Jew. In fact, Chazal say that a Jew who normally would have died that night was spared from dying. So it shouldn't look like a Jew was also included in this Makas Bechiras.
When you look,
and then Kriyas Yamsuf. You know what the pasuk says about Kriyas Yamsuf? The magnitude of the miracle. Kivosus Paro Barich Boy Uforoshev Bayom. Paro and his horses and his chariots came into the Yam. Right? And Hashem returns the waters, because actually what happened is the water split. So Paro saw the water split and his sword, they all went in. What happens? Hashem returns the water on top of them so that they're drowning. They're bobbling up and down drowning. And Bnei Yisrael is walking through on dry land at the same time that Paro and his... Not Paro, he stayed out, he was a coward. But that all the Mitzrim and their horses and their chariots are bobbling up and down and drowning. Is it dry land? Or is it a sea? Is it water? You know what it is? It's both at the same time. Did you ever see water and dry land like this? This guy's drowning and this guy's walking on dry land. It's mind-boggling. We can't even imagine it. Even in Hollywood, they couldn't make such a movie. They tried, but they couldn't make it to this extent. When someone sees that, Vayar Yisroel, Vayar Yisroel is Hayod HaGdoyla Shrosa Hashem B'Mitzrayim. Through the Yamsuf, they came to recognize the Yad HaGdoyla B'Mitzrayim. The Targum says, in Mitzrayim, not to the Mitzrim. They began to appreciate all of the miracles of Mitzrayim. The Yamsuf was the culmination. They appreciated everything, and they said, Vayaminu B'Hashem U'V'Moshe Avdoy. And Chazal say, what a shifcho, a lowly maidservant, saw in the Yamsuf, Yechezkel Anovi, didn't see in the greatest of his insights, in the greatest of his prophecy, in the greatest of his nevuah. He saw the chariots, he saw the Maisa Merkova, but he didn't see what a shifcha saw in the Yamsuf. And when we have eyewitness testimony to these events, and when we relive these events every year, and when we remember these events every day as we put on tefillin and tzitzis and mezuzah and Shabbos and Yontif, and especially the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim with the matzah and the mor and everything, this strengthens us to recognize Hashem is with us in everything. One more point, gentlemen, and I'll let you go. Hashem is with us. Hashkocha Protis takes care of everything. Two more points, maybe three. Now, there's a problem with all of this hashgacha. You know what the problem is? The problem is when someone does so much good for me, what's my natural tendency?
Expect it.
To To what?
Expect
it. That's one thing, but even worse.
Not trust Hashem that He's going to give it to you.
Well, okay, but that's the future. What about the past?
Not appreciate it.
Not appreciate it. And more than that, you know what it means to be kofui toiv? What's hakoras hatoiv? Hakoras hatoiv is to recognize, not just to express, but to recognize the good. Kofui toiv means, kfiya means, who knows what the word means?
Opposed.
No. Kofui. Denial. People deny good. You know why we deny good? Why? Give me one reason. Why, when someone does me good, we deny? This gentleman's over here, this gentleman's great, great grandfather, Rabbi Aryeh Levine, used to say like this: if somebody did him something wrong, somebody treated him, mistreated him, he says, what did I do so good for him recently? When someone mistreated him, so he would stop to think, he says, I must have done something very good for this guy, because if you do something good, people want to deny it. You know why? Why do they want to deny it? Why? Tell me why.
They don't want to feel like they owe
somebody. That's right. They don't want to be, the word in English is beholden. I don't want to owe nobody nothing. I want to be free. I don't want the shibud of owing. And that's very painful. And therefore, recognizing and appreciating the miracles that Hashem does, besides that, all the mitzvahs that we have to do to recognize and appreciate these things, create a sense of beholdenness. We become sometimes overwhelmed. Many people are overwhelmed with pressure. The pressure is too much. I can't. I have to do this. I have to do that. And I owe him so much. I owe him my life. I owe him this. Look what he did in the past. And once I recognize Yetzias Mitzrayim and all the miracles that took place, I begin to recognize, as the Ramban said, all the miracles of my life. I gotta thank him and appreciate all the miracles. He does this, move my finger like this, he moves my finger like this, he moves this, he moves that, he moves my nose like this, he burns out. I can't take it. I owe so much. It's overwhelming. I'm too beholden. I gotta begin to deny. The Baal HaGodo, the Toiro, the Chazal did two things for us to help us avoid the denial of being the beneficiaries of so much good from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Two things they did for us. The first thing they did for us is they told us at the very beginning, when they start telling this story, they didn't just say Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and took us to Har Sinai and gave us the Torah and did such good for us. They started with the words. With the words. How does the Haggadah start with the words? I know the Haggadah, but the story, what? Avodim Ayinu! Hey, man! Don't just think, listen, don't just think that I took you out of Mitzrayim and I brought you to Har Sinai and you owe me so much. You were slaves before. So, it's not like I took a free man who wasn't beholden to anyone and I made him beholden with all my chesed, with everything I did, which is wonderful. No, I took a slave! So don't feel so bad that you're beholden now. You were more beholden anyway. And not only that, Eilu la'aitz HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esav Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim, Haronu v'aneinu, we would still be mishubodim. Whatever that means, some mafarshim say that somebody would still own us, even if he took us, even if Mitzrayim disappeared, but there was always a descendant, and a descendant owns any property that the original person owns. So if Paro owned us as slaves, then his descendants would own us today, even though we don't know them, we never heard of them. As far as we're concerned, they don't know us, we don't know them. But I'm beholden! So the Baal HaGodah tells us, you were slaves, and you're still going to be beholden on a certain level, because technically somebody would still own us today. Hashem took us out. It's not so bad to be beholden to him, because he took us out from beholdenness to a better life. He did us good. He elevated us. He shared with us the purpose of creation. He gave us the directives to live a life, to be happy, to be fulfilled, to get his chesed, to get his reward, and to accomplish everything that he wanted to accomplish in this world and the next. So Memela,
isn't that greater than the miracle of keeping us alive?
What do you mean?
Of Rabbi Yaakov Avinu?
What I don't know. What do you mean? Why is it greater?
Because we would have still been slaves. We wouldn't be able
okay,
to
do it. Okay, but that, yeah, but no, but they see, the point is like this: the kind of slavery, the kind. What? Go ahead.
My point. What about when the miracle where Hashem lets you walk or even do or think to do anything like that? Just like you said, not you said, but it says that we were like dust of the earth.
Okay, therefore
that Hashem makes us walk and stuff like
and therefore,
that. Isn't that a much bigger miracle than?
I don't know. I mean, all of it all comes together, you see, because the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim are what awaken us to all the other miracles. If not for Yetzias Mitzrayim, if I didn't realize that Hashem is involved in our lives, if not for the clarity of understanding Hashem that we get out of Mitzrayim, one might think, everything's... I sat with a guy yesterday. He's willing to consider the possibility that he's an accident. Third, that's an accident. I looked at him. I said, you're an accident. Yeah, maybe it's an accident. But when you see it's Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know there's no accidents. You know that Hashem is directly involved. Millions of eyewitnesses saw it and they passed it on. They taught it to their children, their grandchildren, and they relived it year after year to this very day. So now let me just finish. Okay, so now. So listen. So number one, he tells us, guys, don't feel so bad of all the good that I'm doing for you that you're going to be beholden to me. Because I'm trading a beholdenness for a different beholdenness. So don't feel so... Beholden is terrible. Nobody wants to feel beholden. Nobody... Everyone, we'd rather deny the good. But you don't have to deny it so much because anyway you would have been a slave.
He didn't owe Pyro. He owed us. Because originally when we came down, we were working for him and getting paid. Then he stopped
that's
paying
true,
us.
But,
so we
that's true. That's true. But that's true. But what does the Torah say? Hashem told Avram Avinu, Va'avodum. They'll be... Serve them. Ve'inu oisom. They got permission from Hashem. Hashem sold us, so to speak. Slavery. Had Hashem not given Paro the permission, he couldn't have done it. So technically we were his slaves, and that slavery would continue in some form even though they can't find us today, and therefore he says, hey guys, you, the freedom that you have now, although it brings with it a beholdenness because I did you so many tevis, don't be so upset about the beholdenness because you would have been beholden anyway. That's number one. And then he says one more thing and I'm adding. Yeah, listen to this. We do at the Balah, they set up the Haggadah, the Chachomim, with four koises. Four koises keneged the four.
Four things Hashem
said. The four l'shoyin shagul v'itzaisi v'itzalti v'alti. What does that mean? And then dayenu. What does that mean? Hallel. What does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. Listen to this. The four koises keneged the l'shoyin shagul. What do you think? It means, oh, there's four koises. Means four l'shoyin shagul. Okay. V'itzaisi v'itzalti v'alti. No. Chazal said that if we think about Yetzias Mitzrayim en masse, oh, there was a Yetzias Mitzrayim, oh, Hashem did great miracles, oh, he took us out of Mitzrayim, you know what happens? It's very easy to deny. You know why? It's too big to relate to. I can't say, well, Mitzrayim is, what? I know what Mitzrayim is, I don't even know where it is on the map. But no, he's saying, no, the Geula happened in four stages. I want you to lift the Kois Shel Brocha, specifically to thank Hashem, Bohitzesi, the Sepurnu says, they stopped working. Rosh Hashanah time, they stopped working. They didn't have to work anymore. They were still in Mitzrayim. They couldn't leave, but there was no more work after Rosh Hashanah. That's what he'd say, see. The Yitzalti, we got out of Mitzrayim. Another kais, another separate focus on the Hakoras HaTov, on the blessing, on the privilege, on the chesed Hashem did. Ve'goalti, that, Sepurna says, is the Yamsuf. They went through the Yamsuf, they saw their oppressors drowning. That was Geula. They felt redeemed. Avalokachti is that Hashem took them to Maimon Har Sinai. So the Chazal made us appreciate each one separately, taking a kois shel brocha, a lifting up a kois of wine, and appreciating it. And some of that is even on a halal we say on the wine too. That appreciating the nisim individually, the stages individually. So we shouldn't be able to lump them all together, and then deny it, ignore it, not pay attention to it. It helps us to focus on each one separately. Not only that, we say dayenu. Did you ever hear something so silly as dayenu? If he would have taken us to Har Sinai but not given us the Torah, dayenu. What kind of nonsense is that? If he would have taken us and not given us the Torah? So the Goyin says, what does dayenu mean? Anybody know? I shouldn't say nonsense because some of Farshim learned differently. That was wrong to say. But what? No, dayenu lehoides. It would have been enough to thank him. In other words, for any one of the chasodim, and we delineate the chasodim individually, would have been enough to say Hallel. Then we say, what do we say after dayenu? Alachas kamo ve kamo toivo chfulo umuchupeles oleinu. He says, how much more so do we have to thank Hashem for everything he did? In other words, the Baal Haggadah wanted us to focus individually on each chesed that Hashem did. And when you focus individually and you don't lump them together, you can begin to appreciate how much more so do we have to say Hallel on all of the miracles together. And then we continue and we say that, you know, we relive the events. We have Pesach, Korban Pesach. We don't have today, just as Ikoran, Matzah, and Moro, just like they had in Mitzrayim. And then we say Chayev Odom Liras Esatzmoy, that a person can feel and look at himself as if it happened to him. Because this is such a reality. We've described in such vivid detail the events. We've recited the eyewitness testimony. And we've given praise to Hashem, or we've focused on each chesed individually. A person can now, and we eat the Pesach, or we didn't eat today, we don't eat the Korban Pesach, but Pesach, Matzah, more. We relive Makas Bechiris, we relive the speed of the Geula with the Matzah, we relive the bitterness of the Shibud with the more. It's as if it happened to me. That's why we're mechuyev in a special hallel. Because on the night of Pesach, we can feel through all the props, through all the efforts, through all the delineation of the chasodim individually, so we shouldn't lump them together and then to be able to deny the teva. And for everything that we recognize and all the hashgacha protis that we realize, when we see this, we say, we now understand why we're obligated to thank Hashem, because we develop an appreciation for all the chesed Hashem has done for us, and we develop an appreciation. We know we were avodim, so we don't have to feel that he's making us beholden now when we weren't beholden before, and we broke it down to its component parts so we can feel and appreciate each one individually. I just want to share with you one more thought. The first Pesach Seder that I celebrated with my future family before I was engaged, but I wasn't yet married. It was Pesach, and I was there for the Seder by my father-in-law, Zechuto Livracha. And my father-in-law got out of Europe in 1940. In 1940, people weren't getting out of Europe so easily. And he crossed all the way, all across Europe, from Germany, all the way to Italy, till he got on a boat and he came to Eretz Yisrael. Actually, I think he arrived in Eretz Yisrael on Pesach. On the first night of Pesach, he didn't want to get off the boat until Yom Tov was over. They let him stay on the boat. He had his matzahs with him, whatever it was. He started to tell the story of 10 miracles. If you remind me, after Yom Tov, I'll bring it into you. You could read it. I once had him write it, and then we translated it and we published it. But I didn't bring it with me today. But it's Miraculous Escape, it's called. If you remind me, I'll bring it to you. 10 miracles he started to tell how he was saved from Europe. Things that each one of them was just like, you just can't, unbelievable. And I realized that we got so faret, we got so involved in the discussion. I think we forgot about Mitzrayim. We were just talking about Europe, you know, for 2 hours before we knew it. But it was the most amazing thing in the world. It's only because of them that you're here today, you know what I mean? And it's the most, and when you see the miracles of Mitzrayim, you begin to wake up and see the miracles that Hashem has done for Klal Yisrael throughout the generations. He's done for, most of us come from parents, grandparents, great-grandparents who are probably survivors of miracles, who are probably alive, were alive to be able to give birth to the next generation only because of unbelievable miracles. And this is a chizuk that we can all get from this celebration of the Pesach experience.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.